You are listening to a sermon series from Open Door Fellowship Church.
Amen. Thank you guys so much. Oh, gosh. Ooh. Still got it. Billy Foles and I always have it. No matter whatever happens, our hands get in there. Ooh, man. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. I can't even look over here in this area because Doris and David Westcott are there. And so, yeah. I can't even make that hand. Whenever I do it, it looks like a, I don't know, a giraffe. So it happened again. You know my history with the butterfly, or not the butterfly. You know my history with the hummingbird. A long time ago, for those of you who don't know, I was just having a horrible time, and I was wondering, God, can you still use me? Is my life still count? And I cried out to him. It was one of those desperate prayer times. And later in the afternoon, I'm just thinking, so what happens now? Like, did you hear me? What do I do? And I walked out somewhere, and right outside my front door was this butterfly. I'm sorry, hummingbird. I'm sure there were butterflies in the area, and I just want to give them the respect that they deserve. But this was a hummingbird, and he just stood in front of me for the longest time, and I knew what he was saying because what I had talked to God about, and he was saying, "Hey, so from all of creation, I've been picked to speak to you, and I'm really freaked out. You scare me so much. We never do this. We never do this, but I've been asked to do it from our God." And so anyways, he says he heard your prayer and everything's okay, and he's gone ahead, and you won't even believe what's going to happen, what's coming. Okay, I got to go now. You're freaking me out. And I can't tell you, I know he may not have been saying those exact words, but it was something that God was saying to me through this hummingbird saying, "I'm here, kid, I got you." So anyways, last night it happened again. My computer, you'd think, go to the Apple store, do something. But anyways, I'm typing again, and my screen starts erasing itself. Line by line, as it's done so many times. It's like God saying, "What do I have to tell you? I don't like what you're writing." You know, it's like, and there they go. There go the lines. And I'm doing everything. I'm closing it. I'm shutting it. I'm pressing save, escape, anything I can possibly do. And the lines just keep going. And I don't know what to do. Just, ah. I said, "Stop. Stop doing what you're doing." But it's, and so then I call Sam because I'm freaked out. I don't know what to do because this thing comes up and says, "Do you want to save the changes that you just made?" I didn't make them. They went off like that. But you have to make a decision. I called Sam and I said, "What do you think?" And he says, "No, don't save those because you didn't want that. You didn't make that." I said, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Yeah, let's try that." So it didn't work, and half my document went away. So I scratched out some more notes, thinking I could recover what I was saying. But anyways, I have no idea what these notes are going to be for you. So I get ready to go out this morning, and I'm getting ready to leave the house. I say goodbye to Stacey. She doesn't hear me because she's on something that she's doing. And I love you. Yeah, I love you too. I'm panicked. I'm about to go out and make a fool of myself. Okay, have fun storming the castle. Anyway, I stand at the front door and I go, "Whew, ah." And I open the door and there's a hummingbird. And it's like he's been waiting there for several hours going, and his arms are folded, literally. And then he's just doing this thing, and I know exactly what it is. I could be wrong. He could be saying, "Everyone in the neighborhood hates you." Yeah, but I choose to believe that he's saying, hey, so I'm talking to God, and you're still freaking me out, but he wants you to know that everything's going to be just okay, so just calm down, and he loves you. I got to go. And so that happened to me today. And so, yeah. So I don't know why that happens. Never happened before in my life, but it happens now. And I want to talk to you about last Sunday. I told you before, all I have to do is brag and say that I'm in remission of whatever I had, and then it'll start up again. And so I bragged to you about that, and I had one of the worst episodes of my life last Saturday night. So Sunday morning, we get up and we're reading the Bible. And we're doing Bible in a year. It'll be Bible in 4 millennia before we get done. But the honeymoon's over in the Old Testament section. The patriarchs are gone, and now he's given the law, and he's saying what you shouldn't do to slaves. If a slave, if you hurt his shoulder, you have to give him a chicken or something. And if after 2 days he's fine, then never mind, take the chicken back. Then we go into David, and he's wishing the Edomites ill will and wants them crushed under God's foot. None of those things. I understand them. I get them, but it's not what I came to Christ for. And then I get to the New Testament. Yeah. And Jesus entered into Pharisee's house and reclined at the table, and there was a woman in the city who was a sinner. Literally, she knows she's a sinner. And when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she came early and brought an alabaster vial of perfume. Cost of it is the equivalent of 1 year's income. So let's say $70,000 alabaster perfume. $70,000 alabaster perfume, which she bought. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and wiping them with the hair of her head and kissing his feet and anointing them with the perfume. And I started crying. I started sobbing. I couldn't stop sobbing. And Stacy, eventually concerned for my mental health, said, why do you think you're crying so much? And I said, I think it's just so beautiful to see someone trusting Jesus in a way that has transformed everything. So happy that someone gets him. He's always, if there's anything that wigs him out or causes him disdain, it's when disciples or others have been around him for so long and seen so much and they still don't believe. So today is the so what. I'll be back to some practical things next week, but this is the so what of the Christian life. Oh, the utter extravagance of his work in us who trust him. This is one of those times where I would flip it differently. That usually I would say, oh, the other extravagances of his work in us who, by the way, trust him. No, this, the utter extravagance of his work in us, the ones who trust him, with a condition of trust. Trust, gosh, you hear that so much here. You almost gotta get weary of it sometimes, don't you? Don't you have any other card to play? Trust. So let me give this working definition a little bit this morning. It's not about how much faith I can manufacture about Jesus, but whether I am willing to trust who he actually reveals himself to be. If it would be okay with you, I want to make a distinction. It's an artificial distinction, but it might help us between belief and trust. Both come from the same root word, so it is an artificial distinction. But for today, maybe this arbitrary distinction, maybe you'll give me a pass on that. Maybe another way of saying it would be the difference between belief about and belief in. God has, this comes from the Kieran parents, God has done endlessly more than enough to have earned my trust, but he knows until I actually practically trust him, very little he desires for me will come to pass. My lack of trust comes from my fear of trust, not his worthiness to be trusted. So because he loves me so deeply, he continually reveals himself as trustworthy, breaking down my fears and walls of self-preservation. And as I grow to trust the perfectly trustworthy one, I heal, I mature, I become free. Isn't this an astonishing statement? In the Gospel of John, it says this, 6:29. This is the work of God. This, if you want to do the work of God, believe in him who he has sent. When you see him, when you read about him, when you discover him, believe not about him, but in him. Believe in him who he has sent. If you want to do something, he'll do all the rest. But will you do this? Believe in him. Moralism, this is why we spend so much time on grace. Moralism keeps me appeasing a God I am supposed to fear. And so I'm never safe around him. I always feel condemned around him in a moralistic setting or when I believe moralism, that God is never pleased with me enough and I ought to do more. It keeps me hiding and it keeps me appeasing, doing things to keep on his good side. Grace allows me to obey from the heart the real God I trust. The real God I trust. That's what allows me to obey from the heart. And if I ever flip it around, I mess it all up. So Jesus is continually revealing himself to your heart. The mature are simply those who've acted upon what is revealed. The end of his grace is that I would see him accurately and believe in who he shows himself to be and trust him with me. See, I can believe or assent to a theological position, a creed or a stance without risking much. I have a take, but I'm standing outside the arena. But trust or belief in, oh my, that's exceedingly different. See, it requires that I place myself into the game as an active participant. And it has consequences, you guys. This is all so risky. It has consequences. I can get hurt because trust is exclusive. It wipes out other options and positions. See, even standing outside the arena is a choice, a costly choice. For the risk is this, you miss the value of what only trust can bring. But if what I've given myself to is true, this gospel of Jesus Christ, then trust alone can give me the value of everything that's promised. I can gain it no other way. Everything, everything worth having in this life ultimately comes only through trust. Let me give you an example, a human example, a practical example. Stacy and I are engaged. No, we're not even engaged. Yes, we are. No, we're not. I can't remember. No, we are engaged. We are engaged to be married, and we're driving around LAX airport, and I'm about to fly back to Phoenix. I've gone out to visit her, and we're driving around in circles because we want to talk, and she says to me, "This is not going to work, John. I love you, and you keep just taking your commitment right up to wherever my commitment is. You're so afraid that you're going to get hurt. John, you've seen who I am. And I love you. And I am not a bad person. And I do not want to hurt you. But until you believe that, until you trust and believe in my love, nothing's going to change. And you will not receive my love so that you'll be safe." And I got out and I got onto the plane, and it was that night I called my dad and asked for Mom's wedding ring. I went all in. In that moment, belief about her love became belief in her love. And I trusted it. It was so scary. And the moment I did it, I wasn't scared anymore. I hold all sorts of positions. I believe, for example, that there is no intelligent life on other planets. That what Jesus did here on this planet, isn't that crazy? Out of all the planets and galaxies and universes in the solar system and beyond, he chose this planet to have Jesus come die for its humans. I don't think that that could happen on another planet. That's my position. If he figured out a way to do that, no great loss. It doesn't cost me much. But this does cost me. I have believed that Jesus died for my sins. I have put everything, this old hippie, I have believed that Jesus died for everything I have done. And when I say I've put my entire weight upon it and trusted to be true, I mean that everything in my world, everything would be ruined if it were found to not be true. I've placed my entire trust in it. So trust alone can give me the value of everything the object of my trust promises. The risk is that I would waste my life, and the value is that Jesus and eternal life and daily love and joy and health and healing and restoration are mine. Baptism. So interesting. I'm gonna say some words on baptism. It is the visible expression of the invisible act of my trust. We're going to have a baptism on Easter Sunday. Oh, is it a cool day? It is the coolest day to be at Open Door ever. It's just the greatest day. We people come in now. What I'm saying is, this is that time to say, I'm all in. That's what baptism is saying, is I want the whole world to know. I belong to him. Whatever that cost is, I've wiped out all other options, and I'm with him. I become a new creature. I believe that he turned me into a new creature by what he did on the cross and paying for my sin, dying on the cross. And I'm no longer believing about, I'm believing in. And I want the world to know. And so this Easter, we give an opportunity for it. It is such a great thing. Please call the office. Call the office, and they'll have one of the staff or one of us elders come hang out with you, and we'll talk you through so you can form the words that you want to say about your relationship with Jesus. You know what's so cool? We started allowing this several years ago. After the baptisms get done, the real prepared baptisms, the official baptisms that really count, it is crazy. Sam has started to say these words. Hey, look, there's water. It's the words the Ethiopian eunuch said to Philip when he wanted to get baptized. And so Sam says those words, and it inevitably happens. Maybe it won't happen this year, but it happens. Happened to her. She came to church all dressed up, not intending to get wet. And she found herself going, okay, here I come. I'm going in. In one of the most precious things that can happen. Guys, this is that moment. What Hannah did in that moment was to say, I'm all in. I can't any longer not let the world know and all of the angels in heaven, I'm all in. That visible, beautiful sign. Oh, you guys, if you haven't been baptized, will you get baptized this Easter? Oh, what a time. And it would be better for you to get prepared because otherwise you'll get your dress clothes all wet. Okay, so back to this passage. I'm reading this, and Jesus says to Simon, do you see what this woman's done? I entered your house, and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but she, since the time I came in, has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with perfume. For this reason, I want to say this to you. Her sins, which are very many, they've been forgiven. For she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little. Now I want to ask you something. Does she have less sins or more sins than other people? Look, all of us have the same amount of sins in Adam. It's just that she knew she did. And she knew that there was a God. She looked at Jesus' face and actually believed who you are can forgive all of them. And I believe it. Now, those who believe that the most and are not afraid of telling Jesus about their sin or admitting their sin, those who know who they were and who they can be, they get forgiven most, and they experience the experience of getting forgiven most, and so they become your best lovers. You want a lover? Find someone who is convinced that Jesus died for him as much as anyone in the entire universe or her. So put up that first slide. This is the difference of the believing about or believing in. See, I can believe in the concept of a forgiving God and it'll affect my life very little. But if I believe in the Jesus who forgives my sins, I will love more and receive his love more. Period. Now that's palpable. That's tangible. That's active. That's something that this woman saw. What's so happy for Jesus about her is that nobody else in the room is doing it. Nobody else in the room gets it. They believe maybe about the Messiah, but she got all the implications and went all in. Let me give you another example. John, if you can give me the next slide. If you could stay on the slide that you gave me that I couldn't tell was actually the next slide. I can believe in the concept of a God who loves unconditionally. And it'll affect my life very little. But if I believe in the Jesus who loves me unconditionally, something will happen. It will change my person. I will experience being lovable. And I will be secure instead of insecure. See, you can't start it the other way around. I have to look at Jesus and believe that that's who he is. That he has seen everything about John Lynch and said, whew, I'm absolutely always, always, always loving you without any condition. I can never love you less and I will never love you more. I can believe in the concept of a supreme being and it'll affect my life very little. If I believe in the Jesus who is completely in control of the entire world, I will obey from my heart and be freed from relativism. I never understand when people say they argue with God. Is there a time he's going to be wrong? Yeah, this time you got me. Wrong as rain. I was doing so well, but you know how I'm getting older and everything. If I believe that he is in complete control of every second of human history and never makes a mistake regarding anything in the world, then I will find myself from my very heart wanting to obey him. Everything that he says is true. Why would I argue with him? He is right. Well, my heart will be freed from relativism. This is what I think. Well, this is what I think. No, you're going to want to go with him. What does he think? See, it all starts with me seeing Jesus so accurately and beautifully. It's why we spend time with him. It's why we dig into his word. It's why we get to enjoy him and spend time and talk to him. I can believe God is a good God. And it'll affect my life very little. But if I believe in the character of Jesus, that his character is perfect, and he will never play me, and his control over my life, not just the world, but my life, that he never makes a mistake regarding John Lynch, that he adores John Lynch, and his character is on the line. He will never use me or play me at all. The moment I cross over and say, I'm not outside anymore, I'm all in. I'm putting all my hope on that. Because that is how you have revealed yourself. You've said, I've got you, John. Every single person in this room, he says, I love you as much as my only son. And I will not play you. My character is good. My character is on the line with every event. If I believed that, if I jumped in and said, I'm wiping out every other option. Oh, God, help me. It scares me so much. But I believe that you have total control over my life and your character is good. Nobody's ever loved me as much as you love me and you will not make a mistake over me. It will result in this. I will be free to risk with my life. I will dare to do great things with my life because I know he's got my back and I know he will never go, I didn't know you were going to go to Indonesia. Well... You know, there's disease over there. He's got me. So I'll be free to risk my life. Oh, and I'll be generous. Come on, that woman, $60,000, $70,000 bottle of perfume because she didn't know what else to do. I know you're not going to be here long. I know you're going to take care of me financially. I know if you don't, then... then I didn't need that anyway, so I'm going to be generous. I'm going to give away to the things that are most important because you're in control of my world. I won't be stupid, but I will give my life away and my time away because I know you will not play me, and I know you know how to make it up. And there's one more thing. Fear will not cripple me. That's the gift that such people get. It's an actual reality. I can believe God's up there. And it will affect my life some. But if I believe Jesus in the Jesus who lives in me, if I actually take the gamble that I am on my worst day fused with Jesus Christ, that I'm Christ in me, and I don't just say it as rhetoric, but I actually believe the defining characteristic about me is that I'm Christ in me, then I can never call myself a loser anymore. I can never say, oh, I ought to do this more. If I was better, Christ would do it. If I actually believe it, then I can access his entire person every single moment of every single day. I'm not calling down from up there, please, raindrops of your love. Instead, I can access his entire person and his power and his love, and I have a new identity, a new shame-free identity in this moment, and I can stop hiding. And sin can lose its power in me. That's how real that is. This is the risk and reward of believing in. This is why I continue to keep looking at Jesus. I continue to let him love me. I continue to read about him. I want to trust him and believe in Jesus in me. Why I spend more time in the Gospels and Epistles than anywhere else. Because believing in will transform me. Okay, so there's a downside. There's a diagnostic that comes with this. So I've been at this for almost 4 decades, and I'm still insecure. I'm not sure that that's changed much. I feel like shame's going away, but I still feel like, and Stacy would agree, John, you're still insecure. So if I look back, no, I'm right on time, I know that. I'm not ashamed, I don't have to beat myself up, and if you're a young Christian, just relax. But 4 decades. 4 decades, and I'm still insecure. Remember what I wrote about that? If I believe in the Jesus who loves me unconditionally, I will experience being lovable and secure. So what would it appear to you that maybe I have not believed about Jesus? Anybody? That he loves me unconditionally. That he's got me all the time, no matter what. That I'm enough. Somehow, there is still in John Lynch some tapes that say, who you are is uniquely deplorable. Who you are, even Jesus has to go, How embarrassing. I write books. I help write books about this stuff. But I now have to go back and say, oh, Jesus, I want to see you accurately. And I think I haven't in this area because of my own failures in the past and my own shame story. What a beautiful thing. I have friends who can stand with me now and say, let's unpack that. Let's talk about that. Let's process that. I don't have to go another 40 years missing that. Same with you, my sweet friends. Same with you. Remember, it's not about how much faith I can manufacture about Jesus, but whether I am willing to trust who he reveals himself to be. Oh, gosh. So let me give you a practical example of this. Right now, over at whatever that hospital is over on Shea and 90th, sits Joni Williams. She is our precious friend. She sits right in here. But she has leukemia now. And the stats on her are not great. And I want to tell you something. Her head is shaved bald. And it's not growing back for a long time. And she's really sick, and she's been taking chemotherapy. Do you want to know who I think might be the most joyful person in all of Phoenix right now? Joni. Even her husband is happier, and that's hard to say that Mark would be happier. Listen what I said. If I believe that he's in control of my world, I'll be free to risk and I'll be generous and fear will not cripple me. This is not something she's drumming up for the occasion. It's the natural outflow of someone who went, I'm all in. And now that it's happening, she says, oh, John, you would not believe. I feel his presence all the time, so close. I'm having the time of my life. It's horrible. It's stupid. I don't know what's coming next, but you guys, that's the fruit of trust. My precious sister, I'm getting to watch her and go, I know not everybody experiences it that way, but when you do see it that way, you just go, this is not made up, this is not hyperbole, this is not religious talk. So before she went in for an injection to see if she had leukemia, it's a big needle, and before she went in, she played a particular song on her iPod in her earbuds before they wheeled her in and as they wheeled her in. It is a song by a group that we love, that loves us. In fact, Bart was intending to be here, the lead singer for Mercy Me, in a couple of weeks, but their tour ends up, they have to be in Tucson the next day for marketing. But he said, I want to be at Open Door. I just want to hang out with you guys and have our lead singer and do some worship and talk. And anyways, they have a new album out called Lifer. They're a little Christian band, Christian, little funky Christian band. It is the number two right now selling album in the entire world. And this song is what Joni was playing. And I want to tell you, it is a song that someone who has done this gets to sing. It is a song for all of us believers. It is a song for all of us who have dared make that leap and said, Jesus, I take you at your word. I am scared. I am freaked out. And I wish you would do something different. But even if you don't, enjoy, my friends. It is the song, Even If.